now from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It's been a minute here since you've had Tommy and I back in the chairs. Jacob Albracht, Tommy Kester, Jad Chambers producing. We have just a couple more of these before we switch over to 7 a.m. bright and early, moving forward for Sports Daily beginning Monday, January 6th. Don't worry, if this is your regular listening time, you'll still have us right here. We're just expanding the show, growing the show, moving into that morning drive, and we're very excited about that. We'll have more on that over the next couple of days. But we have a lot to sort of cover and get back to. We haven't been here in a while. We've got the Chiefs playing with backups. We've got the CFP rolling forward with a few games in the books and all kinds of different stuff. The IHOP hotline is open for you at 869-1240. You can jump on there. You can also leave us your comments on our video streams. Those are available to you Facebook, on YouTube, and on X. So make sure you view us that way. And of course, on 12 News Connected, you can get in touch with the show there as well. You can listen to us on the Odyssey app and leave us your voice messages there. We'll give away some HTO a little later in the show. We've got all kinds of good stuff planned for you. Tommy, it's been a minute. Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Happy New Year. It's January 2nd. All the fun officially ends today.
I got to try to remember how to do this. It's been a little while since we've been on the show. And like you mentioned, we get 2 days of doing it like normal, the way we always have before things change. And we move to morning drive. I got to get down a routine with, you know, how I'm going to get coffee. And I mean, Prairie Fire coffee, obviously, is what we use here in the studios. But getting up before the crack of dawn to do a morning show with you, man, like, it's going to be a lot of fun. But I'm a creature of habit and routine. So I got to figure out a really good way to get that working.
Me too. We appreciate Prairie Fire Coffee for bringing us coffee every morning here at the KFH and Odyssey family. Yeah, it is going to be routine based. I'm trying, and it's like today was the first jarring, like, okay, now it's time to go back to work. Now it's time to like get up. My kids are still asleep right now. Like, we're all still in holiday mode, running around like crazy. We went back to Texas, which is always about like a 4 day bender of just like partying and hanging out with family. And I have a massive family there. And so we're all just kind of trying to get back in the groove of things. And it's nice that it's essentially a 2 day week for a lot of people out there. So, you know, we'll do it. We'll do it because we've had plenty to talk about. We had college football yesterday, two more CFP games in the books. And look, Tommy, a doomsday scenario here for me that I've seen coming is coming true. These teams that have not played in a long time are really struggling, and it shouldn't surprise any of us. Boise State rolled by Penn State. Oregon rolled by Ohio State. It took Arizona State a while, but they were getting rolled in the first half before the fourth quarter. They finally woke up and got an incredible double overtime game there. But, you know, I hate to say it, you could see this coming. You could see it coming a mile away. These teams are going to struggle that have to sit out for 3.5 weeks, especially when their competition does not. They already played a game.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate that we're going to get through this very first year of the 12-team playoff, and that's going to be the narrative that everybody takes away from it, is just the fact that you've got these blowout games left and right. And, you know, really it took Texas and Arizona State to have really kind of the most competitive game that we've seen thus far in the playoffs. I mean, even going back to the very first round, you had a bunch of blowouts and all of that, and, you know, a couple other blowouts. And of course, like you mentioned, it took Arizona State, you know, to have a valiant effort in the second half to make it a game and force overtime and all of that, you know, which was great for the Big 12, great for Kenny Dillingham, who got a nice lucrative contract extension a few days ago, great for Cam Scadabo, you know, to be able to make it a game when it looked like Arizona State was going to get blown out early. But yeah, that's going to ultimately be the narrative when this is all said and done, is that regardless if you're talking about a length of time off from some of these teams or just sort of a disparity in talent level, the narrative is going to be not competitive games early on in the CFP. And that's what everybody is going to be talking about moving forward. And it's something that I think the committee is going to have to address and try to figure out.
Yeah, and we'll get into potential solutions as we make our way through here today. We will talk about that. We'll talk about the Chiefs this weekend. We have our betting insider, PJ Glasser, on in just a little bit. And I'm excited to get with him on some of this stuff. Any angles? Does this mean we should be betting Notre Dame today? Not just in college football, but in the NFL. Do the Chiefs have a chance this weekend? There's all kinds of things happening in the NFL that we'll pay attention to. So we'll have PJ Glasser on. He'll help us with that. Tim Fitzgerald is going to join us as well. That's coming up in hour number two. Some of the times on our guests are shifting a little bit in our shifts of the program. So Tim will join us a little after the top of the hour as he would normally join us. We're making these transitions. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a blast. And I believe, Tommy, we now have, I believe, everybody on board. So all our insiders are making the transition. I'm trying to think if we've, I don't think there is.
We've got everybody and we've even, with us.
And we've added a Royals insider full-time, Jalen Thompson, who you heard maybe here the last time he was in. So our full cast of characters, if you will, are going to shift over with us into these morning hours. So you won't miss any of them. Like, everybody's going to be generally where you've always heard them. So that's good news. We'll be right here. If this is your normal driving around time listening to us, you'll still have us right here. We'll just have you 2 hours earlier also. And it's going to be awesome. We're really looking forward to it. So we'll talk about this college football thing. Scataboo's great. We knew that. He showed up in the game. But we got to find a solution there. I don't know what you think about the Chiefs' chances to win, Tommy, before we dig way into it. But I think they got a chance to win. I mean, Denver's got everything to play for. So naturally, the hip shot reaction is to say, oh no, the Chiefs are going to get crushed. They're 10.5-point underdogs. But you got to play somebody, right? You got to put somebody out there. So that'll be interesting to see. I think they can definitely cover. Can they win,
though? Yeah, I was surprised to see the number where it is. I mean, I figured that the Chiefs would be underdogs, but 10.5-point dogs? I mean, even when you're starting Carson Wentz and a bunch of other backups, you would think that the Chiefs could cover 10.5 against Denver. So that one was surprising to me a little bit. But I'm with you. I think that they could definitely cover that number.
Right, it's not like the preseason,
right,
where you've got guys that aren't going to make the roster playing. Like, you only have so many guys. So we'll see. That one is really, really interesting to me. The NFL, we haven't been here in a while to talk about the NFL, but there are some things coming down the line here. It will be a fun topic to get into. I gotta get PJ Glasser's take on it, because it will be it will be good to see. We've also had college basketball since we've last been on. KU opens with a loss. K-State opens with a win. Said nobody ever when we were doing this thing. So that was crazy.
Wichita State getting ready to kick off conference play on Monday. So yeah, I mean, we're into the swing of things for sure. I'm surprised that we've gotten this far into the show and you haven't yet mentioned anything about the Broncos and Bengals game.
Oh, we
from
will.
Last
we
week.
Will. We'll get there.
Yeah,
we'll get there. Don't worry. We'll get there. This scenario has been in the cards for a while, and it's there. But we'll get to that. We also have Pro Bowl announcements. Pat Mahomes not a Pro Bowler. Can you believe that? That's also out there today. So we got a lot to cover over the next hour and change here, and we'll continue to do it on Sports Daily. It's all Brockton Caster. Don't go away. Jad Chambers producing. We are coming right back. Back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you on this. What day is it? January 2nd. I know that. What day of the week is it?
Thursday.
Feels like a Saturday or something. I don't know what's going on. I need a break from. I need a vacation from the vacationing, Tommy. Just get back in the groove a little bit. I also, you mentioned you're a creature of habits. I am very much a creature of habit. So we're getting back in the groove before we make our big switch over to a 7 a.m. start here for Sports Daily. And we say it, and we'll say it again. For those that are driving around at that time, you can listen to us on your radio. Maybe you're listening on the Odyssey app. For everybody that listens to us 9 to 11, nothing changes. We're still here for you. So we're excited about it. Let's dig in a little bit here to the CFP, Tommy. So we have, you mentioned Arizona State, Texas. Oregon gets rolled by Ohio State. There is no way you will convince me that this doesn't have everything to do with the fact that these teams take way too much time off. Oregon beat Ohio State earlier in the year. It's a close game. Certainly much closer than yesterday. Yeah, maybe Ohio State's better than Oregon. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying Ohio State wouldn't win this game or whatever. I'm saying the teams that get the byes and wait 3.5 weeks to play between games are at a very clear disadvantage. We would never do this in any other sport. Imagine that, right? Any other of the major sports we consume, having the best teams wait almost a calendar month in between games when their peers, right, have played and basically get a more or less a tune-up game is wild. Because you want the bye, right? Like you want the bye, but we're punishing these teams who get the bye. It's just so unnecessary, right? It's so unnecessary to do this. We do not need to like cling to these old things. Who cares? Play the games. Start the playoff immediately after the regular season ends.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I've heard people compare the byes to like the Chiefs, for instance, like getting the one seed in the AFC, and then they're resting their starters this week. And so they're basically going to have almost a full calendar month of their starters not playing. But it's different because at least some players are getting reps. At least there is an actual game. Whereas, you know, in college football, you've got the teams that got the bye. Literally nobody is playing a game on their team, yeah, you know, for almost a full calendar month. So it's apples and oranges when you're comparing that. And I've heard arguments about, well, scheduling, and it's tough, and you've got all these different things. Well, I mean, look, there are ways to figure it out. You know, as much as the annual Army-Navy game is tradition, there's a week before Christmas, after the regular season, before the conference championships, where that's the only game that's on the schedule. It's the only game on the calendar that weekend is Army-Navy. It doesn't have to be that way. And I have a ton of respect for the Army-Navy game and all of that.
Sure, play it on a different day.
You can do it, or you can just have it be with, you know, other games. Like, it doesn't have to be the only game on the calendar that particular week. Like, you can change that. I hate the week zero games. It's just an argument to add additional games at the beginning of the regular season that don't matter usually. And in a lot of cases, they're games that, you know, are not super important anyway in the whole grand scheme of things. I mean, you could make some changes there potentially if you needed to scoot the start of the regular season up and not do a week zero, but have week one start a week earlier. I guess you could do that. I mean, there are ways to work around this. It doesn't have to be this way, I think, is the total point that I'm making.
We do things with Division I college football that we don't do anywhere else, right? Like, we don't do this. We don't have this discussion anywhere else because it's nonsensical. We don't even do it at the other levels of college football, right? Like, it's just this one for some reason. It was, even if we didn't have the playoff, it's silly and idiotic to wait as long as we do before bowl games. I know they want these bowl games during the holidays, and but think about, like, even when it was a four-team playoff for the national championship, all you're doing to the sport is letting people sort of forget about you. And we do, right? Like, what other world, like, we both work in marketing sort of things, Tommy. Like, in what other world would you say, all right, you've got all this momentum, we're coming out of conference championship weekend, now let's not do anything for a month. We'll do, and you know when we'll launch it? Right during the holidays, when people are scattered around everywhere and all their viewing habits and all of these things are chaos. Let's do it then. Like, it does not make sense. And the product would be better, And there would be more eyeballs if after you got through conference championships, you played the first round of the playoff the very next week. So what would that do, right? Like, what would that look like? It's not even hard to get there. It's really not. So you had most teams were playing on December 7th was their conference championship weekend, right? And so you go, okay, we've got that. We got December 7th. What would that have looked like? You would have had then December this year, 14th, you play the first round, right? You've got the opening round. Teams that win basically on December 7th, in large part, would have the 1 week of a bye to the 21st. So you've played the week we just played or are playing on Saturday, the 21st. Okay. And then whatever it looks like, I don't have a problem with trying to get to New Year's Day. That's fine. Now you've got basically what would be the semifinal, which becomes whatever, the Rose Bowl, whatever. You've got that happening, and what we're only a week behind where we are now, and then you're playing your championship game on whatever day you decide to play it the next week. You might try to get with the NFL and be like, hey, yo, can we have, or if you need to, you do wait the full week and a half and play that game then, which is where I think they played anyway, right? On January 6th. If you're insistent on playing it on Monday night.
Well, but now it's pushed back. I mean, it's basically because of all of this, what the national championship game is on the 13th, I believe.
Yeah, which is just
now moving forward. So, I mean, it's a week later because they've added these playoff rounds.
And it's not as bad to have it that far away if you are playing games consistently to get there.
Yeah, I wonder too, you know, I know that obviously the circumstances are not good whatsoever for the reasons why the Sugar Bowl is postponed to today. But the fact that it is today, this afternoon, you know, there's one more of these matchups with Notre Dame and Georgia today. And it makes me wonder what we've known now about the teams that have gotten this bye. And Georgia is shorthanded anyway without Carson Beck. You know, does that mean that just the chances of Notre Dame just rolling Georgia are significantly higher? You know, in that regard, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if we're talking about
Notre Dame's at an advantage,
talking about teams that have had long times off, and the fact, you know, that Georgia is missing its starting quarterback. I mean, I think you and I both, correct me if I'm wrong, you and I both picked Notre Dame in this matchup, I believe. To me, I'm doubling down on that because the trend has been the teams that have not played for however long are struggling, at least out of the gate. The only caveat to this is that the fact that Georgia has a backup quarterback, it's probably advantageous for him to have some more time to get prepared and get ready to go for this game. But, I mean, it's hard to not follow the trends.
We don't do this anywhere else, right, for a reason. Like, we don't there's a reason for the play on the field. There's a reason for the momentum of the sport itself. Like, we just don't do this anywhere else but college football. And I am convinced that for most casual fans, you're allowing them to sort of turn the page onto other things. I would put myself in this category. I love, love, love college football, but I don't put it ahead of the NFL. I've already switched to, in a large degree, to college basketball because you haven't given me any college football for 3 weeks. Like, you're allowing me to sort of rewire my brain, my habits, my all of these things and switch over. You've also, by the way, allowed the NFL to come in and take over some of these days. They never would have done that. Now they have. And now it makes all of this more difficult because you've allowed the NFL to grow even more and go into these days where you should be playing games.
I think the NFL is like a shark that smells blood in the water.
Absolutely.
You know, and they know that all of the uncertainty around the formatting and the conference realignment and all of that, I think there used to be days and used to be, you know, different scenarios that were sort of sacred where you didn't have college football step on the toes of the NFL and vice versa. And now the NFL is like, shoot, like, college football is changing every single year, and so we've got to go and get ours. I mean, think about the fact that you had first round CFP games at the same time that NFL games were going on. Like, that was the Chiefs played the Texans on Saturday, what was that, December 21st, when you had first round CFP games going on at the exact same time. You know, and that never used to be the case. Like, you would never expect like a high profile bowl game to be opposite of an NFL game. And that's happening now, just basically because of the uncertainty around college football.
So that's problem A with this. And listen, again, been an advocate, happy we have 12 teams. Doesn't bother me too much if there are lopsided games in this, because I think that's a larger product of what we're talking about now, more than it is a product of having 12 teams in, because you would have had teams that weren't even going to make the CFP win games now. Ohio State would not have made it, right? So that beat the number one seed. So it's not that. That's not the, I think the time off is the reason for lopsided games. We can fix that. That's an easy fix. Stop waiting so long to play the games. Nothing else that they're doing even has to change. You just play the first round game at a home site, which makes it much, much easier for fans to get there. And then they have 2 weeks to plan on travel to these other bowl games. They'll get there if they're going to go. No big deal. Or you have two rounds of games at home sites. That's the other thing you can do. And, you know, you figure out a way for the bowl games to get theirs and the bowl sites and all those things. Figure it out. Or it won't be as good as it can be. Here's the other thing I want to propose for college football at the Division I level. Get rid of a, whatever you want to call it, week zero cupcake game, whatever. Get rid of one bye game and have a conference semifinal game. So you get basically at the end of the year you guarantee good teams two quality games in the power conferences, obviously. That would solve like the Indiana issue. I think Indiana was the other thing through year one that, you know, we'd need to look at, because they were a team that didn't play anybody. They played one quality game and got their butts kicked and got in just because they're in a power league, I guess. I don't even know why. You make that a conference semifinal. You add that game to the back end of the schedule. It's great for the fans. It makes sure that a team is qualified to get there, right? It would have been Oregon, Ohio State, Penn State, and Indiana playing in the little four-team playoff. You get two games, whichever two they happen to be, and then boom, you've got your situation there where we don't have those kinds of teams who get lucky, basically. It's not Indiana's fault. They got lucky that the schedule fell the way that it did. That's my other year one of the CFP proposal. Give me a conference semifinal and get rid of one cupcake game for the power conferences, and give me these games much, much sooner. And I think we'll get there.
You know, I think that going back to, I mentioned this at the very top of the show about how the narrative after year one of the CFP is going to be the disparity. It's going to be the blowout games. It's going to be the amount of time and the buys and all of that. That's unfortunate to me, because I mean, this format is better than anything that we've had before, right? But it's going to be clouded by these issues that we've seen in year one. And I think that's okay. I mean, the thing is that like there's so much instant gratification that is needed in today's world, where it's like, this is the new format. It's got to be perfect out of the gate. Oh no. I mean, like, it's going to take a little bit of time to get through those growing pains, to figure out the best way to make it work, best way, most equitable, all of that. It's never going to be perfect. But I do think that going through what we've gone through so far in year one, Indiana getting in, and then the blowout games and the length of time from the start to the finish, all of that stuff, you can file away. And unfortunately, you're going to have people, I'm sure, like Greg Sankey in the SEC, who's going to point at it and say, this is why the SEC needs to have its own playoff, blah, 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 blah. Can we let it breathe for a second? Like, let's get through this year, figure out what worked well and what didn't, and make some adjustments here and there instead of throwing the baby out with the bathwater and just, you know, trying to start completely over.
We also got Arizona State, Texas, right? We also got Oregon, the number one seed, was on the receiving end of one of these blowouts, right? So you can't have it both ways. The argument was always, well, like, the top team is just going to blow everybody out anyway. Why would we be? No. Ohio State, a team who normally wouldn't get in because of one bad loss to Michigan, is, and we all knew this, right? We all knew they were one of the best teams in the country. And now one bad loss to Michigan didn't sink their season, and they still have a chance to go prove that maybe they are the best team in the country, and they knocked off the number one seed. Again, I think that time off has something to do with that, but not everything to do with that. They wouldn't have even been in, so you can't have it both ways. You can't say, oh, well, there's these blowouts, so we're wasting our time anyway, and say, you know, there was a blowout because it happened the other way, right? It happened the way that it wouldn't have happened in the first place. That's why we need to be playing playoff games, because we need to know, oh, wait a minute, is Ohio State actually one of the best teams in the country? Maybe they are. We all knew they were. Here we go. Andrew just chimes in, and I knew this was coming because people that hate on the CFP are just waiting. You said that the team at the top lost because of a bye, lots of circular logic. It's not circular logic. Here's the logic. If we didn't have a 12-team playoff, Ohio State and Oregon never would have played. So the 12-team playoff is better. It's better because we have the opportunity, more so, for the best team in the country. That should be the end of the discussion. Who is the best team in the country? College football has never allowed us to get on the field and prove that before. This is by far, with 12 teams and conference champions getting in and opportunities for at-large type teams who have very good resumes to get in, still by far the best. We're putting, though, now through year one, the first run at this we've had, we're putting the top teams who put themselves in the best position at a clear disadvantage by making them wait this long to play a game. So, yes, it's a way better way to determine a champion. No, it's not yet perfect. So the goal should be, okay, let's look at this. Clearly, all these teams that took this much time off were at a disadvantage to then go play at a neutral site. How can we prevent that from happening? It's why we have this discussion in the NFL. It's why we will, in the next hour, discuss the Chiefs' decision to rest starters. Is it too long? When you know you're going to also have a first-round bye in the playoffs, should you try to get them in there to some degree at the end of the season? Tommy and I will probably disagree on the philosophy there, just like the preseason, just like we disagree on that. I don't think there's a cookie cutter. Look at the Major League Baseball playoffs. Teams that don't play those wild card rounds kind of struggle out of the gates. This happens all the time. But in college football, it's like we're forcing it to happen for even longer than we do in these other places. So it's a better system that can be better than it has been in year one. I think if we play the game sooner, we give a more fair shake to the top teams.
Look, I think that it's never going to be perfect, but I think you can make some tweaks to make it more equitable. And I want to see top teams be able to get byes. That's an advantage. They just got to tweak it and make it better.
You're right. It's good. I'm glad we have 12 teams. We'll talk to PJ Glasser about it. Does it give us any insight into today's game? We'll hit that and some NFL topics. Welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you. We are joined now by PJ Glasser, our betting insider. Glad to have PJ in on the line, host of the Send It In and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider Podcast. Insider calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. Also, be sure to listen to the Send It In podcast for more analysis. Just search Send It In wherever you find your podcasts. PJ, we were talking about this Friday. We make our picks last Friday. I basically picked based on the buys just to test my theory. These teams that haven't played in forever are going to be at a disadvantage in college football in the CFP. I think we saw that in all three games so far. Arizona State eventually got the ball rolling. Are we going to see it in the Sugar Bowl though? Should this be telling us that Notre Dame has a big advantage in this game over Georgia tonight? How are you? Happy holidays. Happy New Year.
I'm good. Yeah. Happy holidays to you guys, too. It is something that I think is interesting. You know, that's been a big topic of discussion for like the MLB playoffs, especially in how some of those teams have fared with the long layoff. I think if there's one team equipped, though, to handle that, it is Georgia, just because they've played in the college football playoffs so many times, even when there were four teams. They've played in the national championship two of the last 3 years. So they know what the long layoff is like. Kirby knows how to get his team ready for that. A lot of teams that have been in this position, you know, Kenny Dillingham and ASU have never been in that spot. Spencer Danielson and Boise have never been in that spot. Dan Lanning and Oregon have never been in that spot. So I take it with a grain of salt, because those three teams that we've seen who had the byes, they've never been in those situations before. So it's an adjustment, I think, for those coaches to learn how to maximize that window and get your team prepared for that time period. Whereas Georgia and Kirby Smart, they've been in this position plenty of time. So if there was a team that would be ready from the jump and not look like they maybe are a little bit rusty, I think it would be Georgia. So I don't take too much into it for this matchup.
It's basically a coin flip game, PJ, today. And Gunnar Stockton is getting the start for Georgia with Carson Beck down, you know, for the remainder of the season. And that's got to be the massive reason as to why it's basically a coin flip game. What do you like in this game? What do you expect to see from both of these teams?
So, guys, I think this game is essentially the same game that we saw in the Rose Bowl last year between Bama and Michigan. Tell me it just doesn't have the same feel, right? Georgia's Alabama, Notre Dame's Michigan. Georgia's been there, done that, like Bama had. And much like Michigan, people don't realize Harbaugh didn't win a playoff game until last year when he won two of them, obviously, and won the title. And that's kind of where Notre Dame's at. Notre Dame obviously really hasn't won a game of this magnitude in a long time. Much like that Rose Bowl last year, though, the spread's a pick 'em. The total's 45.5. That game was a defensive slugfest. It was low scoring. It was hard fought. It went to overtime. I kind of think we could be in the same in for the same thing today between Notre Dame and Georgia, like a 24-20 kind of game, 23-20 in overtime, something in that neighborhood. So I lean the under, knowing that maybe we could get screwed a little bit in overtime, but I like the under in the game. I like Notre Dame, though, in this matchup. I picked Notre Dame to make it to the national championship game, knowing that they would have to go through Georgia, and it's because I love the matchup against Georgia. You guys look at the Bulldogs' season, and they lost to Bama and Ole Miss, and then they really struggled with Georgia Tech. The Yellow Jackets took them to eight overtimes. The theme that both of those three teams shared is they have mobile quarterbacks. Haynes King for Georgia Tech had his season high in rushing yards against Georgia. Jalen Milroe for Alabama had the second most rushing yards this season in his game against Georgia. And then Jackson Dart had his third most rushing yards against Georgia. Why has Georgia been able to beat Texas both times? Because Quinn Ewers isn't a mobile quarterback. He doesn't present that challenge for the Bulldogs. So it's pretty much been that simple for Georgia. When they've gone up against a quarterback that can scramble, that can run, they've been in trouble. Keep in mind, DJ Lagway and Florida were tied with them in the third quarter, right? So if you have a mobile quarterback that can make plays, that's kind of been Georgia's issue this season. Riley Leonard has over 700 rushing yards this year, and I think that's going to be Notre Dame's game plan. So you combine the fact that Notre Dame's got one of the best defenses in the country going up against a quarterback making his first start, and then Notre Dame offensively is a team that wants to run the ball to begin with and has a mobile quarterback. I think they match up really well with Georgia. So I like Notre Dame today.
All right, there's that one. We'll talk to you again before they play the next round of games. So we'll hold off on those. Let's go to the NFL. This is an interesting week. There are some games with everything on the line. There are some games with nothing on the line. Seemingly, that is a collision course for the Chiefs and the Broncos. One team, nothing to play for. One team, everything to play for. 10.5 points, though. We talked about this as we kind of opened. 10.5 points. This isn't the preseason. These are, they got to play somebody, right? The Chiefs have to play somebody. Are you really willing to lay 10.5 points in a game? Not. I think the Chiefs could win this game. Let alone
I agree.
10.5 points. That's crazy.
Crazy. No, I like the Chiefs, and I'm with you. I would take some money line too. Look, I get Mahomes isn't going to play. Kelce, Chris Jones are going to have some other starters out. Andy Reid's still coaching last time I checked. Spags is still calling the defense last time I checked, right? So, and don't you guys get the feel? You would obviously have a better idea of this than me. I get the feeling, though, that Kansas City has heard all year that they're like the biggest fraud 15-1 team of all time. Don't you think they're looking forward to the opportunity to play without their stars? Yes. Don't you think they're looking forward to the fact of proving to people that they're a better team than what's perceived of them? And obviously, look, you have a chance to knock out your division rival of the playoffs. This was a team that came into Arrowhead and should have beat them if it wasn't for a blocked field goal. So I'm with you. 10.5 is too many points. Carson Wentz, I mean, who knows how many more opportunities he's going to get to start an NFL game in his career. I think he's looking forward to the opportunity, but I'm with you guys. I mean, you know, this line opened up like 7.5 and then it just kept going up. And now we're getting 10.5 in a game with a low total. I mean, Kansas City's defense, I still think is going to do a really good job. All the pressure is on Denver in this game. All of it, right? And I know Bo Nix is having a nice season, but at the end of the day, he's still a rookie. And last time I checked, last time Bo Nix had this much pressure on him and he was a 10.5 point favorite was when they were in the Pac-12 championship game against Washington and they lost that game outright. So give me the Chiefs, fellas. I love them. Plus 10.5.
Saturday night, PJ, primetime. It's going to be a big game. The Bengals are clinging on to hopes to make the playoffs. They take on the Steelers in Pittsburgh, and the Bengals are 2-point favorites. This, you know, seems to be outside of the game that determines, you know, in the NFC North on Sunday night. This is the other huge profile game when you've got Bengals and Steelers and the Bengals trying to make the playoffs.
So there's two ways, guys, that I would bet this game. And I have a theory that what Pittsburgh is going to do, obviously, if the Ravens beat the Browns earlier in the day on Saturday, the Ravens win the AFC North, the Steelers know that they're going to be a wild card team. There's a lot of talk of what Tomlin's going to do, right? Because the Ravens are 18-point favorites, they're going to probably win that game against Cleveland. Does Tomlin just not even play his guys? Does he just rest his starters from the beginning? I don't think he's going to do that in the first half. I think they're going to prepare to win. I think the difference, keep in mind, even though the Steelers probably aren't going to win the division, the difference between them getting the 5 seed and playing Houston, where they're going to be a small favorite, as opposed to being the 6 seed and playing Baltimore, where they're like a 7.5 point favorite. So right there, I think is motivation enough for Pittsburgh to potentially play all their guys and try and win this game so they get Houston instead of Baltimore in the wild card round of the postseason. I have a feeling, though, that Tomlin might rest some of his starters in the second half, potentially. So I think Cincinnati's second half could be an interesting look. We know the Bengals obviously have to win this game. They're going to play all their guys. So that could be something to watch. If I think the Steelers prepare to win the game, then they go into the locker room. They assess maybe the score of their game. They see if the Ravens won. Maybe Tomlin takes some guys out. Also, another thing I would do, the team that's in the best position this weekend is the Chargers, because they know they're either going to be the 5 seed or the 6 seed. And the fact that the Steelers play on Saturday and the Chargers play on Sunday, LA's already going to know whether or not they have anything to play for. So if you like the Steelers to win this game, I would parlay the Steelers with the Raiders plus the points, because if the Steelers win, the Chargers are going to rest guys. And that -5 is going to turn into like a -2.5, -3. And then you can have yourself a nice middle. If you still like the Chargers to win the game, you can bet them on a shorter money line, have the Raiders +5. It's an interesting way to attack it. But if you like Pittsburgh, I'd parlay them with the Raiders.
I love and hate this week. It's going to make everything hard, right? How do you even handle player props? Like, you can basically only attack games like Sunday Night Football. You know everything's on the line there, right? That's the game. It's like, okay, we know we're going to get everybody's everything in this game. It's going to be fantastic. It gets flexed into the primetime spot. I still think Minnesota's not getting enough respect in the world of football. But what, Lions 3-point line, what do you like there?
Oh man, I like Lions money line. 3's about right. I mean, these, you know, Minnesota just they're kind of playing everybody tight. And even in his divisional games, you know, I mean, both wins against the Packers were by 1 score. This meeting between these two teams the first time around was by a point. So it's probably gonna come right down to the wire. I just think Detroit being at home is going to be the difference. And Minnesota's on like an 8-9 game win streak. You know, we saw the Lions end streak win streak lose at 10. We saw the Bills win streak lose at about 10. We saw the Eagles. So these teams kind of, they're win streaks. You know, it's tough to get like 10, 11 games. I think Minnesota, Darnold's obviously playing great. Defense has done a good job. But I'll take Detroit here at home. It's going to be a close game. I don't want to mess with the three. But if you had to make me pick, I'll take the Lions minus 160, kind of like the under two. I mean, nobody's going to want to bet the under in this game with how both offenses look and all the injuries on the Lions defense. But these Sunday night games, especially when you get these high totals and these prolific offenses, they tend to be lower scoring games. So little lean to the under and Detroit money line too.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. We've got about 1 minute left. PJ, any other bets that we didn't get to that you love this weekend?
I like the Jags, guys, +5 against the Colts. That's probably my favorite bet. Do you think the Colts are going to be motivated to play this game at all? I mean, they just lost to the Giants. Their season ended. And now they got to turn around and they got to play another game. I think they're done. I think they're looking forward to the offseason. We know Jacksonville's still competing, right? I mean, Mac Jones wants to stay in the league. They're trying to build towards next year. So that's one of those week 18, like, motivation games. Are the Colts going to show up? I don't think they are. So I'm in full fade of Indy. I'll take Jacksonville +5. I take Moneyline +185 as well.
All right, PJ, we appreciate it. We'll join you bright and earlier next week as we shift over to some morning drive. Glad to have you on board for that shift and glad to be ready to get into the NFL playoffs and college football playoffs continue then as well.
Can't wait, guys. Yep. See you next week. Have a good rest of the show.
That's the host of Send It In and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, PJ Glasser. Insider calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. I'm gonna have a hard time. I already had a hard time last week with bets, Tommy, because I was in Kansas and I had to get all my bets in before I crossed the state line to Texas. So it's like you're following stuff for bets you made on like a Tuesday for a Sunday. And now we get this week, which is just absolute chaos. Yeah, and how do you even know who's motivated?
It's a tough week to make any kind of bets whatsoever. I mean, like, even a team like the Eagles that have, you know, been playing great, they're not playing Saquon, you know, this weekend. And Saquon's on the cusp of making history, and he's not going to be able to do it. So there's just – it's weird. This last week of the regular season is always bizarre in the NFL. Makes it really difficult to make any kind of pick and feel confident about it.
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm taking Chiefs +400. Should they be playing any starters? This will get interesting based on what we were just talking about with time off. We'll talk about the Chiefs' decisions to sit, guys. That's coming when we return. Hour number two, Sports Daily, coming your way.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Glad to be with you on a Thursday. It is we're like seniors at the end of the year, right? You get those weird last couple of, we haven't been on in a while. We've got these 2 days and we're making our big, you know, shift into morning drive to open things up there, but we are rocking and rolling on a busy Thursday. We have a ton to catch up on. We've talked mostly about the college football playoff there in the first hour. Do want to take a second to tell you about Pep and Suter Remodeling. Pep and Suter Remodeling is a great place to take care of all your home renovation needs. Maybe it's a kitchen, like my wife and I went through in the last few months that have gone very, very well. We're very happy with the work there. Maybe it's a bathroom. Maybe it's exterior stuff. That's where we're sort of looking to make our next home project. And if you're like me and not good at any of it, you can give Pep and Suter a call and let them handle it all. Their customer service is fantastic. You can go to pepandsuter.com or you can go give them a call at 316-573-6822. They did a great job. They took care of us. We were very, very happy with the work on our major project. Glad that they're supporters of this program and would invite you to give them a call. All right, Tommy, we go into hour number two here. The Chiefs make their call. They make the call that, you know, we sort of all thought they would make, right? No surprise there. They're not going to play a lot of their starters. Is that the right decision? I suspect that you fully endorse and support not seeing most of these guys in any capacity and not seeing them play in this game.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that you've got to be in a scenario with the Chiefs where you have to take it cautious. I think especially knowing how important the health, you know, of these players are going into it. So I certainly understand and I respect the decision to rest the starters. And I think that knowing that you've got such an opportunity here to be able to have home field advantage throughout the playoffs, to get even healthier than, you know, you have been since basically the start of the season. I'm okay with that. I understand it and I get it. I'm good with it.
Yeah. And that's there. Look, there's a difference. The Chiefs are not going to go in and like lose this game on purpose. And I think when we, so like when we talk about the Bengals, for instance, there's a lot of teams with like sort of implications a little bit into this game. I think if you're a Bengals fan, you're probably in panic mode of like, well, crap. And you could see this coming and they did it to themselves, but they're a team that, you know, probably feels like they're good enough to be there. And now your destiny relies on Carson Wentz and a bunch of backups.
I mean, everybody's
right, still got to beat the Steelers.
Everybody's forgetting about the fact that Miami has to beat the Jets, or the Jets have to beat Miami. And the Jets are a dumpster fire. Miami's going to win that game. There are other things that have to happen too.
There's all these little things. But I think the reality is, and my point on that is, the Chiefs aren't like trying to lose this game. The players that are going to play very much would like to win this game. And you can't sit everybody. And so I think sometimes that gets misconstrued a little bit. We were talking about the betting perspective on that. We both like the Chiefs plus 10.5. I'm going to take a money line bet on the Chiefs. Like, I think they absolutely could beat the Broncos with Carson Wentz at quarterback. Will they? I don't know. Probably a coin flip. I don't think it's a 10.5 point. I could be way wrong about that. We haven't seen most of these guys play, but this is not like the preseason where you have players who aren't playing on the roster. Now, is it the right decision to sit the key players? So I think this is all circumstantial, and I think this is all case by case. I think with Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Chris Jones and Isaiah Pacheco, and there are plenty of players for the Chiefs who this probably won't impact a great deal, right? Those guys have been here so many times that you just sort of trust what they think that I feel this way in the preseason. That's why I didn't have a problem when Andy Reid plays guys. Some people think they shouldn't play. I'm like, listen, they've been doing this a long time. They're really good at what they do. I sort of trust their process a little bit, right? Like, I just will say, if they're all comfortable with this, I need to be comfortable with this. It does make me uneasy thinking about how long it's going to be for key players to have played a meaningful football game playing against a team who has played recently and will have that going in. And it's historically very good with bye weeks, but this is, you know, this is a long time. Patrick, what was it? We had Christmas Day, and then that first round will be the second full week of January. So you're looking at a potential of, you know, 1, 2, 3 weeks off, almost like the situation we see in college football. So it is a little bit different. Now, it'll be at Arrowhead, right? That will help, certainly. And again, it's the back-to-back Super Bowl champion who they should be okay. But it does make me uneasy to think about them playing a game that with that much time in between it. It does. And it just, you know.
It doesn't for me, because they've been in this world before. I mean, they've been the one seed. They've had a bye. They know how to operate. We also know historically the way that Andy Reid plays coming off of a bye week, so, or how he coaches, how his teams play coming off of a bye week. So I don't feel uneasy about it. And also keep in mind that it wasn't that long ago that Patrick Mahomes went down with, you know, an ankle injury that looked pretty bad in the moment and was hobbled and played the next week and all of that. So he's going to absolutely soak in, I think, the time to get healthy. You've got Hollywood Brown coming back, and he's already been back, and he's been, I think, a major factor offensively for the Chiefs. So you've got opportunities here, I think, to get to full strength from a health perspective. I don't have any kind of uneasiness whatsoever with the fact that they've already locked up the one seed. They've locked up that bye, home field advantage, all of that. I think it all points to, you know, a really advantageous situation for them overall. I don't have any kind of concern whatsoever about the length of time that the starters are going to be off.
So the Chiefs were the one seed back in the first of these, you know, not last year, obviously, but the year before, they were the one seed. And honestly, I don't even remember how they handled the end of the season. Did they have it wrapped up? Like I think when you get into this part of the year, like every season is different, right? If Patrick Mahomes was 100% healthy, would he like to play a quarter of football here? Maybe. And maybe that would be the right thing to do. But this year, he's kind of coming off an ankle injury. Okay, this isn't the year to do that. And the beauty about how the Chiefs can do it is they've been here so much, right? Like there's no cookie cutter answer, I don't think, to how that particular team should handle this. I'm trying to think of another example. If let's say you had like an upstart, let's say we had the Commanders in this situation, right? And God, Jaden did, like, do you really want to put him on ice for that long? I think it's different.
That's a different,
for
yeah,
every
that's
team.
A different scenario. And you know what? Honestly, it goes back to Dan Campbell talked quite a bit with the Lions about the decision on whether or not he should rest the starters last week, knowing that it was going to come down to this game on Sunday night to close out the regular season for the NFC and for the division and all of that. And ultimately he decided that he wanted his guys to play, you know, and that was the decision that the Lions made. And it was really, I think, intriguing to hear his school of thought and to hear his reasoning behind it, because to your point, there's not a cookie cutter answer that is like a one size fits all. You should always do this, always rest your starters or always play them. It is circumstantial. It's situational based. There's a lot of different factors that go into it. I didn't have an issue with Dan Campbell deciding to play his guys, and in the same way that I don't have an issue with Andy Reid deciding to sit his.
And if Andy Reid decided to play his guys, I wouldn't have an issue with that either. But like, and this is where, look, I get it's different than the preseason. Like that, the risk associated with it, the perceived risk, to me, you have to. You can't think of that first, or you would never survive in the game of football. There's always going to be a ton of risk for injury in these types of things. You have Mahomes, who is battling an injury at the moment. You have Kelce and Jones, who are older players. You have Isaiah Pacheco, who we all know, you know, is a battering ram out there.
You have Hollywood Brown, who just got back out on the field.
Right.
Do you want to put him out there in a meaningless game and risk an injury for him in the playoffs? No,
and it's,
you don't.
Yeah, and again, like it's different for every player and every team and every situation. If I'm Dan Campbell with the Lions, there's also an identity that you're trying to maintain here. There's also like, what are we about? What do we stand for? What do we, and it goes back to, I've read a lot, John Madden did this and played his guys in a meaningless game at the end of a season against the Bengals. And it's like, you know, but that's the thing. Nobody's trying to lose here.
Yeah.
Like you're not challenging your identity. You're giving different players a chance to get in there and win a game against the Broncos and be disruptive, right? Like that's,
yeah,
it's as much about that as it is anything else.
And you
in
never
this
know, you could have some backup guys that show you something in this game,
yeah,
where then you can lean on them potentially in the playoffs when maybe you didn't think that you could. That the Chiefs also have a Swiss cheese offensive line, especially on the ends. And you've got DJ Humphries that has been injured. I don't even know if he's going to be a factor in the playoffs or not, but you've got another week to get him a little bit healthier if he fits into your playoff plans. Like there are a lot of, I think, advantages to rest your starters. You mentioned the older guys like Kelce and Jones. DeAndre Hopkins is one of the older guys.
Yeah.
He could probably use a week to be able to get back, you know, to full strength also. So, I mean, all in all, it makes a ton of sense to me.
We'll have more on that. We got Tim Fitzgerald coming up later this hour to talk about K-State. Let's talk a little college hoops, though, from a bird's eye view when we return. It's Albrock, it's Caster, Chad Chambers producing. It's Sports Daily. We're coming right back. Welcome back, everybody. IHOP Hotline, ready for you, 869-1240, brought to you by IHOP, the official breakfast partner of Xbox. Try the decadent, fully loaded French toast only at IHOP. We're getting you ready for We're getting ready for college basketball season all of a sudden. Want to say thank you to Crestview Country Club for being a supporter of the program. Lots of holiday events in the books now for Crestview, and you sort of transition into the next season. Something Tommy and I need to get on the books are the TrackMan golf things. So we'll have that for you as well. So get out there, check that out. You can play indoors even in the cold weather. Tim Fitzgerald's golf game is how good, Tim? If you where are you at with your golf game right now, Fitz?
I haven't played in 30 years. That's where I'm at.
Okay.
I decided if I wanted to spend 5 hours cursing and drinking, I would just skip the golf part and go to a bar.
Yeah.
I'm more efficient than you guys.
Or if you thought you'd spend, I don't know, 2.5 hours cursing and drinking, you might watch K-State basketball. But here we go, Fitz.
Publishing.com.
We had KU lose a game to West Virginia at home, and K-State open with a win against Cincinnati. This is wild and awesome too, by the way, because maybe they can get back to where we thought they'd be all along. That is a big response to a basically 20-point loss to Wichita State to come out and get a win like that. Cincinnati is good this year. That is wild and an awesome thing to see for this program.
I can't explain it. It was a good segment. Thanks for calling. It was one of the strangest things I've ever seen. They look like a real basketball team, and they haven't this season. They haven't looked like they want to be together, play together, like each other, understand the game of basketball. And then all of a sudden, after I don't know how long, week, 10-day break, I don't know. They look like a brand new team. I guess their Christmas wishes came true, and they played to the identity that I thought they needed to play to. Coleman Hawkins and Doug McDaniel needed to step up and be the alphas. They were. They've worked on Coleman Hawkins to become more of a scorer. He's a generous teammate. He likes to pass. He likes to get everyone involved, but that's not what K-State needs right now from him. They need points, and he gave it. 20-10, rebounded well, scored well. They looked greatly improved. Let's see if they can sustain it. They go back-to-back on the road with TCU and Oklahoma State this weekend and on next Tuesday. And if they come out of that, you know, at least winning one, okay, we got something going on here. Or was this just a one-time flash? We'll find out.
You know, you mentioned Coleman Hawkins. Obviously, that's going to be the headline of him stepping up, having the double-double, 20-10 in the game. But I've focused more in this game on Doug McDaniel just because he's been really quiet also. And I think really, had it not been for the struggles that Hawkins had early in the season, there would have been more focus on where had Doug McDaniel been early on. He stepped up with 17 in this game against Cincinnati. You mentioned sort of the impetus on both of those guys to be more of the alpha, and we definitely saw that.
Yeah, he's gone from a guy that stood around a lot and didn't quite grasp it to a guy that's asserting himself. And if he gains anything from coming to K-State, it's going to be that you've got to assert yourself. You can still be a great passer, but it doesn't have to be every possession. And this is a talented team. And I think what the most encouraging thing about that at the end of the day was, at the end of the game, it was two other guys. It was the Jones Knott brothers making plays that won the game. So there was a lot of encouragement there. That's a good Cincinnati team, and they took them out of what they wanted to do.
They won a game. They won a game in which they didn't shoot the three particularly well. They won a game. They had, you know, enough offense in a game where Brendan Hawson didn't shoot the three particularly well. And we had been waiting up into this point for them to be able to do that. They hadn't been. It's kind of been Hawson or bust, three pointer or bust. They're not going to go a lot of games where they don't shoot the three that well. And I think that's an encouraging thing.
Oh, yeah.
They won a game where that didn't go well. That will go well in a lot of games they play, but they finally found a way to win a game in other ways.
They sure did. They did. You're exactly right. The best half of basketball they'd played was at St. John's, and they looked really good. But it was Brendan Housen hitting three-pointers, and they did a great job of feeding him the ball and keeping him in the zone. And a halftime hit, and he came out of the zone, and the team shut down. this team that we saw the other night at Bramlage Coliseum adjusted to what went wrong, what the other team did, and responded. And guys, they haven't done that. They just have not even come close to doing that. And I think it was a great encouragement that this team finally decided, let's be a team, not just a bunch of guys running around, and started to buy in on some of it. And boy, it looked a lot better. The ball was moving. The defense was moving. They just seemed a lot more alert to what they needed to do, and they got it done.
You know, of course, in Wichita last weekend or 2 weekends ago, whenever it was, Wichita State beats Kansas State by 20 points. That to me, I think, could have been, after that game, the direction of the team could have went one of two ways. They could have absolutely fallen apart, even more so than they had, or rallied together. And to me, it seemed like there's been this point of emphasis since the Wichita State game, and we saw it come to fruition against Cincinnati. The point of emphasis, and you mentioned it too, not just standing around and trying to shoot threes to win a game, but actually running some offense and actually trying to make sure that you're getting your top guys involved and creating shots and being able to get good looks and that sort of thing. And I was skeptical about whether or not they could actually do that sort of thing, but they did. And I know that you mentioned a few minutes ago, we'll see if it's sustainable and if they can keep that going. But man, that was a good start for Big 12 play.
It really was. They went from a team that didn't even look like they were running offense or just passing to try to get someone to shoot a three-pointer to a team that was clearly running something and being good about it, being disciplined with it. And this was such an amazing transformation. One of the coaches said, it just takes time. Look, I know it takes time, but those first 11 games were dreadful. That's a third of your season. That's too much time, but at least they got it done. Now they have such a momentous amount of work to do in Big 12 play that in a regular conference, it would be tough, let alone the Big 12, where, I mean, you've got KU, Houston, Arizona all coming into your place. You already beat a Cincinnati team that was ranked. So you're going to have to start knocking people off. And boy, if you really want to start compensating for that horrible start, you got to win both of these road games. They're both really winnable with TCU and Oklahoma State. These are the opportunities you have to take advantage of if you want to respond and be in a good position towards the end of the season to have a shot at the NCAA tournament.
Well, and if you just told me that they'd be where they should have been at the beginning, then I'll say, yeah, they got a great chance to win enough of those games. Let's talk football, Fitz.
Yeah.
Is there anything more impactful, you think, to the when I say future of the program, I mean next year, than what we saw from Dylan Edwards in the bowl game? Because, you know, if it's not DJ Giddens, the question has been, will Dylan Edwards, can he handle that sort of workload? He's the same, he's a smaller framed running back, but it's basically what Deuce Vaughn was.
Yeah.
He was incredible in that game. Is that enough to hand the keys to him next year and say, run with it?
Well, I think we'll see the combination of Jackson and Edwards. Are still kind of sniffing around, looking for a little bit bigger back, maybe for short yardage, because Joe Jackson's bigger than Dylan Edwards, but still not even what DJ Giddens was, let alone a real power back. Right. So I think they might be looking for that, but only if they can find the specific guy. I'm going to be honest here. Dylan Edwards was spectacular, but that game was built for Dylan Edwards. That was a big, Big Ten built defense meant to stop power running games, not meant to stop lightning. And I mean that. That was K-State's game plan, is to try to get the ball in space to their speed players, be it Jace Brown, Avery Johnson, Dylan Edwards, and they did that. And once they emphasized that and got back to that, the offense exploded and Dylan Edwards just absolutely went off for, 195, 196?
Something, yeah.
On 18 carries. I mean, it was fabulous. He was breaking long runs, and the entire offense was explosive because the emphasis in this game was to get the ball to the edge, or at least get the ball to someone quickly, whether, you know, it was an immediate try to trap someone and get the middle of the line to open up. Once they got back to that in the third quarter, they were outstanding. But that was the most focused game plan I've seen them have this year. They had something obviously they wanted to do, and they did it. And it wasn't just because DJ Giddens good, we're going to turn around and keep giving him the ball, which is a fantastic way to play football if you got a back like that. This was actually scheming against the opposing defense and tearing them apart. And that's exactly what they did. They overcame size and physicality with just sheer speed. And that's something that K-State needs to get back to, because that has always been the identity of K-State football.
You mentioned the word focus game plan. I think discipline game plan also fits really well too, because as soon as the Wildcats in the third quarter fell behind 34-17, my thought was, man, it's going to be really tempting for them to just need to air the ball out nonstop to try to get back in this game. Yep. But that focus, that discipline to continue to work that game plan of getting the ball to Dylan Edwards and getting to the edge got them back in the game. And I know that Johnson had a couple of touchdown passes in the second half as well. But man, like you mentioned, it was the Dylan Edwards game. And that would have been really, like I mentioned, really tempting for Chris Klieman to say, we're down by 17. We got to start throwing the ball a lot more. And they didn't do that.
Yeah, you know, the key to that was when they really got in dire straits, I think it was Dylan Edwards in two plays was gone for a touchdown. And you're right. I was thinking, boy, they're going to throw the ball a lot. How does this impact? I mean, they were light in receivers in this game. How does this impact the game plan of, you know, trying to use their speed? And then, boom, Dylan Edwards breaks one, and suddenly the math changes again. You know, you're back at a two-score game, and K-State just kept finding a way to answer. It was pretty incredible what they did in that second half. Just keep coming back at them and score that many points in a half is impressive. And they got it done. I'm not fully sure still how they scored that many points and made that many big plays in a half. But, boy, I tell you what, covering sports is interesting because at Chase Field, when you go down, you're in the same tunnel as the players are coming off the field through. And Rutgers – coming off that field was shell-shocked, stunned. They had that game won, guys. Yeah. They did.
Yes, they did.
They did. Had no idea how they lost it. It was hard to explain, and still is hard to explain how K-State got that done, but they did, and gave K-State a great launching point into next season, as they now feel pretty good about the weapons they have, and maybe they've already identified what kind of team they'll be. They're going to get you in space and run fast. And that worked well against Rutgers. Will it work well against sometimes equally fast Big 12 teams?
But that's not going to be the problem next year if there's a problem. The other side of the ball is going to be a problem next year if there's a problem. And Rutgers scored 41 points. Yeah. And we haven't even talked about the defense. I think the offense is going to be fine. Is the defense going to be fine next year?
I don't know.
If K-State can be the best version of itself without a really good defense. That sounds obvious, but I think the identity of K-State still has to be, this is one of the better defenses in the conference next year. And to me, they seem a long way from that right now.
Yeah, but they played really good defense down the stretch. And what was interesting is, other than VJ Payne, who's going to be back next year, they took every veteran defensive back off the field. They were playing freshmen and redshirt freshmen and sophomores out there on the back end of that defense, and they were really good at the end of the game. Maybe it was Rutgers just lost sight of what they wanted to do, but I think we all noticed the coverage got a lot tighter at the end of the game. And I thought that was really encouraging. They return a lot of young players, and they're still doing some work in the portal. I think they'll be fine. I think this class of 2023, I recently did one of my daily delivery videos on it. They've had 15 out of the 23 guys they signed see significant action out of that one class. They're redshirts, freshmen, or sophomores. And a lot of those guys were on the field during that stretch, and I think it's very promising.
It's everything, right? Can this team get to the CFP? We saw Arizona State take Texas to the brink. Real quick.
Yeah.
We took too long to play these games.
Yes.
Right. Can we talked about this a lot in the first hour. Can we just play the first round of the playoff right after conference championships? Like, what are we doing? Why are we overthinking this?
We've noticed two things here that people are talking about. We're all talking about, and I'm guilty of it too, Big 12, how's it compare? ACC, how's it compare? And, you know, Big 12's done a good job of improving its stock this bowl season, I think. But the real question is how big of an advantage is it to have home field advantage? Now, granted, the best teams had it in the first round, so it looked pretty obvious. But also, so far, all three teams that played in the first round have won. All the byes have lost so far. Now, granted, two of them
played in a month.
two of them are the teams that earn buys because they're conference champions. I get that. But I think Chris Kleiman's right. Let's just go to 16. Let's just play 8 first-round games on the home fields of conference champions and the highest seeds. I think conference championship should get you a home field advantage, whether you're the higher seed or not. And then let's move that next round up a little bit. Let's get going with this. You're right. They just waited too long. These teams haven't played in almost a month, and they're going up against teams that played like 10 days ago, 11 days ago. That's a huge advantage.
It's just let's not overthink it. You don't even have to go to just play the games faster, sooner.
Yeah.
You don't even have to take it to 16 if you don't want to. Just play them quick. Every other level does it, right? It's not every other level does it. Other level.
And every other level does it with more teams. And that's why I'm like, 16 doesn't add any more. It makes 4 teams play more games or 8 teams play one more game. And then you get past the buys, you get past all that stuff. You can start just shooting these games out of the, out of the cannon here. Let's get going. We want football. And I think having more than a week is a good idea, but having a month? Oh, come on, man. That's nutty. That's college football not being able to quite break from itself. Not quite reinvent itself in the proper way. Okay, we're going to do the playoff, but we got to play the games right when the bowls are.
Yeah.
Really?
No, you really don't. Nobody cares.
You don't need to.
All right. Well, Fitz, next week we'll be a little earlier.
Yeah, I'm not
as happy. I know, but we will reward you appropriately. I don't know how yet. But you don't get to decide because I'm afraid of where that could go. But it will, we'll have something for you on the early morning Sports Daily shift next week.
If I can think of anything, I'll let you know. Beer sponsorship. If anything pops into my head, free beer, I'll think about it and I'll come up with some beer ideas that would work well for
me. We can take care of beer anytime in Wichita. That's not a problem. Tommy's in charge of sponsorship, so he'll get right to work on that.
I'm taking notes right now.
Yeah.
Drones do deliver beer.
That's true. That's true. All right, Fitz, we'll talk next week, bright and early.
Thank you, boys. Okay, I'll be there.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald. GoPowerCat.com, making the shift with us. Go a little earlier, as all our guests are. And you'll hear them all, and they're in the normal 9 to 11 windows as well. It's going to be fun. We're excited about that and excited that all of our insiders are coming with us. Because they're such a big part of the program, and we love having all that insight there. K-State football, get really excited about what we see there, but then it's also like Rutgers put up 41. Like they've got to be able to play a little defense there as well. And I know it's a bowl game. That's a big ask for bowl games. But we'll see. We'll have more on that. All right, when we come back, we'll talk KU. The opening loss, we'll look ahead a little bit to Wichita State as they get ready to open the conference season tomorrow. Don't go away. It's Sports Daily. All Brock and Caster coming right now. Want to win some HBO? You can do that right now. Iced or hot coffee drinks, or of course the amazing iced tea, sweet or unsweet. There's a big new flavor launch coming Monday as we launch into Morning Drive. People are going to be really, really excited about this one. It's the return of one of the all-time popular flavors. All you got to do to win a free tea and a free coffee right now from us is text the keyword tea, T-E-A, to the short code 20357. That's T-E-A to 20357. You can enter once per day, message and data rates apply as we come back here to Sports Daily. And we will continue to talk a little college basketball. Real quick comment from Rick, who says K-State could have been in the CFP with Will Howard. I don't think so, but maybe they would have been there when they won the Big 12 with Will Howard a few years ago. But I think they made the decision for the program to transition to the Avery Johnson era. And I think you'll see that pay off over the next, at least next year. And this team was poised to get there until Avery Johnson got hurt. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. I don't think we pay enough attention to the fact that he got hurt, became a limited runner, and it really hurt their offense this year.
I think the other thing, too, to keep in mind is that Will Howard, with Ohio State around him and then the players in that program.
Correct.
It's a better Will Howard than the Will Howard with the talent around K-State that surrounded him last year. So, you know, Will Howard, he put on a great show yesterday. There's no doubt about that.
I love that this is happening.
And it's great, but, I mean, he definitely landed probably, I'm trying to think of, like, other players, other quarterbacks that transferred programs last year that had such an advantageous landing spot than Will Howard at Ohio State. I don't know if there was one.
No, I don't either.
I think it was Will Howard going to Ohio State.
And it was a good fit both directions, it was. Too, by the way.
Like, and it shows it. I mean, it absolutely shows it.
Yeah. His skill set with those weapons as a distributor, but if he were at K-State, to Rick's, you know, sort of point there, he wouldn't have the same weaponry that he's working with at Ohio State. And so I think that's a really difficult comparison to make. I think the right thing to do is enjoy the growth and future of Avery Johnson while still, as a Wildcat fan, if that's what we're doing here, rooting for Will Howard's success, because it's fun to watch. It's awesome to see. I do not like Ohio State, but I have a hard time not rooting for Will Howard, for instance, because of what he did for the K-State program. They won a Big 12 championship with Will Howard.
Yeah, it was a great fit. It was a good decision, I think, for both parties, for sure. And, you know, for Will Howard, it extended his college career, extended his football career. I know that,
absolutely.
You know, I know that there's going to be conversation about whether or not he could be drafted or whether or not he could find his way on an NFL roster. I think probably it's borderline. I don't think he'll be drafted, but I bet he could sign as a, you know, undrafted free agent for a team. Maybe I'm wrong. He could maybe go in one of the later rounds now. Or something.
Look, there was a point after they won the Big 12 championship, I thought he was going to be a top 3-round pick because of his size and his skill set, and he can run a little bit.
I think it's borderline. It wouldn't surprise me if he didn't. But also if he did get taken in one of the last rounds, you know, by a team that, you know, needs some quarterback depth and that sort of thing, I think he'll find his way on a roster in some way, shape or form, you know, get an invite to, you know, training camp and that sort of thing. Will he latch on to a roster next year in the NFL? I don't know. I think jury is probably still out on that.
He was a high-end prospect after the year, and then he had a bad year and just fell off the radar. This is why the transfer portal is a good thing for these guys. But, yeah, you know, Will Howard having a great postseason so far, and we'll see what he does in the next round. All right, let's talk KU hoops. Wichita State, by the way, they play tomorrow to open their conference season. We'll try to get that in just a minute. So, first, though, Tommy, KU hoops. Are we seeing what we feared? Are we just basically seeing a repeat of last year? Man, we did not think that was going to be possible with the guys that were brought in this year, but it really does feel an awful lot like last year. And maybe you just slot Zeke Mayo into Kevin McCullough's offensive impact role, but like they're not getting anything from the rest of these guys. And I don't even really know what to say, well, other than
to answer your question. No, it's not a carbon copy of last year because they do have Zeke Mayo and he's a playmaker.
He had Kevin McCullough last year,
but
too,
Kevin McCullough didn't have that kind of offensive prowess.
Not what I mean. I'm not saying they're similar players. I'm saying they had the three returners plus Kevin McCullough while he was healthy.
Right.
And then it wasn't enough to have the, you know, behind
that's,
that.
That's so the difference is that, you know, Mayo is a more prolific scorer than Kevin McCullough ever was. McCullough brought a bunch of value defensively and that sort of thing. So there is a difference there. But big picture, generally speaking, it's infuriating to me that you've got the three guys, the three main returners and Harris, Dickinson and Adams that I think all three of them have regressed this year, that none of them are playing up to the level that, you know, that they're accustomed to or that we expect of them. And I understand that Bill Self totally values experience over talent or trust over talent. So he's going to lean on the guys that he's most comfortable with, that he knows the best and that sort of thing. But you're not getting the production. And I know that a lot of it, like from Griffin and Storr, I mean, AJ Storr has been really bad. Like, I know that they're not playing well, but they also haven't been given quite the opportunity, I don't think, to be able to show exactly what they can get. They've not been able to, you know, have the training wheels be taken off. Bill Self is really kind of like short leash on those guys. They sit if they make a mistake, that sort of thing. you've got to kind of let them spread their wings and go, because what you're doing, the team you're putting out there and the way you're running your offense is exactly what we saw a year ago, outside of the fact that at least you've got Zeke Mayo who can create some offense, but those three main guys are not getting the job done for you.
Hunter Dickinson should never play a college basketball game in which he only scores 10 points, especially in a game where he doesn't have a foul, right? Like, it's not like that can't happen. He must create basically the floor for the offense. You know, that's, you got to go there.
I'm not sure KJ Adams should play the amount of minutes that he's playing. I mean, I think that I understand all the intangibles.
Not if they're going to need him to be an offensive weapon,
right?
His role isn't for that in an ideal world. When KU was at its best this year, he was like the defensive suite. He was basically what McCullough was defensively a year ago. I just, like, if there's not going to be depth, we've seen this before.
There is depth. There is 100% depth. It's just not being utilized. It's not being executed.
They're not playing well, right? Like,
well, they're not given the opportunity to play well. Like, that, you know, you've got, and I know AJ Storr is an anomaly on that because he just has not been good. He's been flat out bad. But Rylan Griffin's had a short leash. Flory Badunga has had a short leash. Like, these other, you know, David Coit, who had been really productive early on in the season, he really isn't super visible anymore. Outside of Zeke Mayo, the depth pieces that were brought into this team are just not being utilized in the way that they should be. And that's on Bill Self. Bill Self is the best coach in America as far as I'm concerned, but he's a stubborn coach and he does what he does. And he's got his system. It's not working right now. In my opinion, until they figure out the depth pieces and until they figure out the distribution of minutes with the, you know, experienced guys and all of that, you have to run everything through Zeke Mayo. Like, he has got to be your main focal point offensively, because at least you know he's reliable to score, because nobody else is.
I think Dickinson still has to be the like, everything has to run through Dickinson, because in theory, like, if Zeke Mayo can be that kind of scorer and you begin your offense with Dickinson, like, that's what you want, right? Four threes, and only a handful of guys are even look even comfortable taking one, right? Like, that's another issue from last year, is guys just don't want to take them. And I don't know.
Things get tightened up the longer a season goes on, especially once you get into conference play and that sort of thing. We've seen a distinct shift from some of the high-level games that the Jayhawks played early on in the season that they won, where they were gritty and they were taking clutch shots and they were making clutch shots, to now. And I don't exactly know what that shift has been, what that change has been. Like I mentioned before, Bill Self always values experience, but the experienced guys, I don't think, are giving you the best opportunity to win. I think you need to just basically kind of throw your hands up in the air and say, all right, like, let's just go out there and start flying around. And, like, let's throw Diggy Coit out there and have him alongside Zeke Mayo and see if Rylan Griffin and you know, if they can create offense. Flory Badunga probably needs more minutes, like, all of that, because we're leaning on Harris, Adams, and Dickinson, and those three guys, unfortunately, are not getting the job done right now.
They're not, and I don't, here's my problem, is I don't see a world where KU is a major contender for a title in which Hunter Dickinson isn't one of the best, if not the best players in the country. I don't think it's there if that doesn't happen. And there have been more times this year than I would have anticipated that he doesn't dominate. Like, there have been more situations where he doesn't look like this dominant Naismith type player. And if he's not, I don't know that I can take them on a deep run. And that's, I think that's for me where the problem is. Like, it's, and I don't have a problem with, by design, it being built around Hunter Dickinson. I don't have a problem with that. I just don't think that's delivering right now. And I don't know what the alternative, if Zeke Mayo becomes like then they're going to be in big trouble. Like, that just is not, they're not, I don't think they're built that way. I think they're built for Hunter Dickinson to be steady Eddie, you know, 15, 18 points a game, and then everybody else work around that, versus, you know, Zeke Mayo being this offensive focal. I don't think that's going
to
work.
I'm just saying, you need Zeke Mayo to at least be able to create some offense for you.
Absolutely.
Because he's the only consistent offensive threat that the Jayhawks currently have right now. And I'm not saying that that's the best version of Kansas to make a deep run and to potentially, you know, win a Big 12 title or, you know, even compete for a national title. But that's the reality of where they're at right now. The only person consistently producing offense is Zeke Mayo. So for the time being, you need to lean into him while you get everything else figured out.
But that's what they're doing, right? And it's not working to a large degree. They are leaning into him because he's the only one stepping up to do it. And that's not enough. I love Zeke Mayo. I'm very, very glad he's there. The other three, for me, most notably Hunter Dickinson, must become. Hunter Dickinson needs to be a first-team All-American, no doubt about it, dominating every game. And he just hasn't seemed like that to me this year, like he did even last year. Which is really interesting, and I don't even know why.
I mean, don't you think that opposing teams recognize that, first off, he's probably not producing at the level that he'd like to, but also that the team outside of Zeke Mayo, there really isn't consistent offensive threats, so they can throw the house at Hunter Dickinson to stop him?
But don't you think they did that last year, too, right? Because that was pretty obvious.
Yeah, but again, I think KJ Adams was better last year and DeJuan Harris was better last year. Like, those, you're not getting anything from those guys at all. Well, really, it's been Dickinson, and I mean, he's the main guy that you need to shut down. You don't need to worry about anybody else.
Correct. I mean, that is obviously a problem, but I'm just looking right now. I mean, he's 3 points under his career average this year. Like, he's just not producing at the same level.
I'm not saying
he won't or can't. I'm just saying I think he has to if this team's going to be as good as it can be.
You know, and credit to West Virginia. Darian DeVries is a hell of a coach.
Sure.
Everybody's going to talk about the foul at the very end of the game. KU lost that game in the first half. Nah, it was bad.
Let's not even start that conversation, right? KU not getting a call at home. We'll just go ahead and push that to the side. All right, we'll come back. We'll spend just a second on the Shockers. We will spend much more time on the Shockers who begin the conference season tomorrow. Don't go away. Sports Daily coming up.